Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Katarzyna Dufret, and you're listening to Sorry Partner.
Hello, and welcome to Sorry Partner, a podcast about bridge and all things interesting to bridge players, brought to you by bridge partners and friends, Catherine Harris and Jocelyn Starts. On today's program, we talk with Polish champion Katarzyna Dufret about maintaining bridge life balance, staying in the moment at the table, and the analog pleasure of playing face-to-face. Plus, she shares her top tip for developing players. But first, let's kibitz. Hi, partner. How are you, Jocelyn?
I'm fine, partner Catherine. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. I was at the club and something happened that I was amused to share with you.
Oh, okay.
Not sure how this one's going to go over. You know, partnerships, people play with some people for a while and then they're not playing with them anymore and then they're playing with someone else and what have you. So I'm sitting in between rounds with somebody I know quite well whose partner has gone to get a cup of tea or something. But it's a new partnership. He is not playing with his regular partner. So, you know, naturally I inquire how so-and-so, what's going on, and shares with me that they are taking a break. Okay, not the end of the world. Happens in bridge all the time. But of course, ever curious, I'm like, well, what happened? Is everything okay? You know, am I trolling for stories? Who knows, maybe.
Or is it you're just your insatiable love of gossip?
How dare you? How dare you?
No, it's all for the good of educating the bridge public, of course. I know you.
Exactly. So it transpires that this partnership has had a number of tensions, but the straw that broke the camel's back was the now ex-partner's tendency to lie about their responses to Roman keycard Blackwood because they hate playing slams.
They hate playing slams.
They must also hate their partner playing slams. So apparently they just systematically and regularly would give incorrect information if there was a slam auction because they didn't want the partnership to be in a slam. And understandably, it was driving their partner nuts. And so one thing led to another and see you later. I found it both bizarre and very funny.
It is both bizarre and very funny. Isn't the whole point to find your slam?
Well, I guess I look, you know, I also understand maybe players at a particular level still harbor some kind of anxiety about it. I don't know. I just had never heard of anything like that before. You know, I thought, okay, get to the right contract, muck it up, or be in the wrong contract and muck it up.
We do that all the time.
Right, right. But to actually deliberately give an incorrect response, I hadn't heard that before.
I give incorrect responses all the time to Roman Key Card, but I don't do it on purpose. And I always feel very, very bad when I've done it.
Oh, mortifying. I mean, I can remember all the times I've done it because it is seared into one's brain.
Seared. Like, I don't know how to count to four. I'm so sorry, partner. I can't count to four.
It's so annoying. But what would you do if your partner was deliberately telling you stories? I mean, come on. Come on now.
Well, yeah, no.
No.
So I don't recommend that anybody do this.
No.
And folks, don't try this at home.
Do not try this at home, especially if you want to still have a bridge partner.
Yes.
We have two letters today, Jocelyn.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know I love the letters.
What is not to love?
Bring it on, people.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are more people out there with some great stories. We do want to hear them. Our first letter today is from Bill, who has sent us many limericks before.
Ah.
He has sent us another one today, and we look forward to more in the future. Was it 1430 or Blackwood? Didn't talk about slams as we should. I messed up the aces, had too many spaces. Down two in a slam was just no good. So that's what that person was...
Partner was worrying about.
Yeah, exactly. Too many spaces with all those aces. Our next letter today, Jocelyn, comes from Deb, who writes to us about encountering a woman at the bridge table that her father was courting before he married her mother.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
I can hardly wait.
I know, it's fascinating. She says, when I was at the Bermuda Regional years ago, I was chatting with my opponent while waiting for the game to start. We did the usual, where are you from? And when she said southeastern Massachusetts, I came back with the observation that I had quite a few relatives from there. She responded with, I have a soft spot for Marion because my brother went to Tabor Academy and I dated the headmaster's son. At this point, my jaw dropped and I said, you dated my father. That's really the end of the story, except for the fact that when I was cleaning out my parents' house after their recent move, I found a scrapbook with a newspaper clipping of Betsy and my father. I'm heading back to Bermuda this year and I'm really hoping Betsy will be too because I'm dying to show her. And she has sent us a newspaper clipping of her father with Betsy at a dance, which is very sweet. So I'll post that on Instagram. And on that point, I just wanted to say, if people don't necessarily have an Instagram account, you can go into our website and click on the Contact Us page and hit the Instagram icon and you'll be able to see all our Instagram posts, even if you actually don't have an account yourself. So you will not miss out.
On Betsy and the headmaster's son.
Exactly. Lovely. Thank you so much, Deb. That's a wonderful story.
That's great. So if you've got any fun stories about encountering somebody from your past at the bridge table, or if you've got a limerick about bridge, please send it to us at sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find all of our contact details on our website at sorrypartner.com, along with some other good stuff.
Coming up next, our interview with Katarzyna Dufrat.
Polish champion Katarzyna Dufrat learned to play bridge in high school. She was recruited to the Polish junior girls team in 2012 and won gold at the World Youth Team Championships that same year. She has since won the Women's European Teams Championships, has twice won the Women's European Transnational Championships, and is regularly on the podium in European and international events. She placed fourth in the transnational teams and fifth in the women's teams at the most recent world championships. We began by asking if she'd had any interesting hands lately.
You found probably the one player in history that has a memory of a goldfish. So the problem with me is always that I always forget the hands I played directly. It's very hard for me to remember what actually happened. I mean, not like the full board or whatever. Of course, we can discuss the boards just after the tournament. But when afterwards you're asking me, oh, did you have any fun hands or whatever? Impossible. So I'm very sorry. I have some memories from years ago. But if you're asking me about recent events, maybe I'm just, you know, like struggling still inside of me. So first I need to digest and then we are able to talk about it.
Do you think there's actually a benefit to your game? Does it help you to move on straight away that you can compartmentalize and just next?
Yeah, it sounded like a good skill, but in general, I'm very good in remembering my mistakes. So unfortunately, it doesn't really help. I mean, I know players that like, even if you talk some about the hand and they're like, oh, yeah, I remember like this 2 years ago, here and here and this hand. And do you remember what happened? No, I don't.
Well, given that you're so good at remembering your mistakes, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made?
Biggest mistake?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. What I think I will remember for always is one special hand. I think we were playing the semi-final of World Championship. We're losing some imps, basically, in the match. And we knew that we were playing back then, at least, like a much better team than we were. So I opened one spade. It went past three clubs by my partner, which basically meant back then invitational with clubs. I had like a super normal hand with 5-5 in majors, 5 spades and 5 hearts. I don't remember exact layout. It goes past and I'm looking at my hand because I want to make a bid. But unfortunately, instead of opening one spade, I open one no trump and everything was on Vugraph. So the good thing was that my partner, after my one no trump, bid 3 clubs, which over one no trump means puppet. I showed my 5 spades. I had both. I could pick, actually. And my partner raised me. Basically, the contract was not making, obviously. But the opponents were just giving me the contract all the time because they also had no clue what is happening. I mean, my hand was completely different from what I showed. But I was so stressed back then, so stressed and probably not experienced enough just to use it that, you know, like every time they were giving me, I was like sweating and like doing something stupid back. So in the end, I went down as I in theory should. I remember, you know, like this frustration and this stress because I did something so, you know, like stupid, something that should never happen. I mean, I opened one no trump when I should like normally open one spade. And this is such a big event and people are watching and whatever. And like afterwards, I remember that my coach said that one commentator said something like, yeah, this is like Polish way to get back on the game. And I was like, yeah, I mean, every situation you can describe, you know, like the way it's going to make you look nice, I guess. So obviously that was not my intention, but back then at least.
I imagine a lot of the games that you play now are on Vugraph.
The important ones, yes. I mean, when you get to the certain level, at least, of the competition.
Yeah. Do you still feel that sense of self-consciousness when you know that people are watching you play?
I think way less than I did at the beginning. I know it way better that I knew like at the beginning and it was always like more stressful. Now I tend to like forget after like 1-2 hands that I'm actually being Vugraphed. So yeah, I think you're just getting used to it in a way. So at the beginning, you always have some more, you know, like thought about it because also the way it's like staged, especially in like the main events, you're entering like a special room and the lights are completely different there usually. And you feel like you're in a very special place. When you play on Vugraph quite often, you're just completely separated from the world. So you feel like you're being watched and like all the eyes are on you. But I think that when you just get into the game, after like 1-2 hands, you tend to forget where you actually are.
What about with kibitzers? Are you comfortable having people literally standing there watching you?
Yeah, not so often. I don't think it's that popular that it was before. I think now when people can watch games online, they have like less interest on coming actually to the table to watch. Sometimes it happened in the ending, yeah, of the tournament maybe.
But how do you feel about having someone watching you?
I don't really mind. I don't like people like standing like on my shoulder, but if they're like just sitting or whatever, I don't really care. I think it works exactly the same as it works in Vugraph or any other thing, that the moment you're just completely into the game, you don't really pay so much attention to what is happening around.
So once you're playing and once you're inside the game, everything else falls away?
In a way, yeah. Like everything falls away, I think it's like a little bit too much because I'm also the person that kind of gets easily distracted sometimes. But I think I'm getting more distracted with my inner thoughts than with the things that are like happening around me. I think that's the case and that's the problem. This is actually what I'm always working on, that, you know, like especially in these longer moments of calmness at the table, or like suddenly I have a tendency to think about what I'm going to get for lunch, or it's just obviously a biggest problem at the hand. Yeah, so this is what I try to work on constantly. But I think that surroundings doesn't matter so much, yeah.
Have there been any specific kinds of mental tools that you've used to try to manage that aspect?
I started to do some work with the sports psychologist to help me with all these kind of things. I think all these tools are very personal in a way that they always need to be adapted to the person that are actually using. So for me, it was, for example, like making kind of a plan of every board, or not of every board, but basically like making kind of a schedule on how the board looks like to remind myself in a way, what am I supposed to be doing right now? So if my thoughts were like floating somewhere, it was easy for me to remind myself, okay, now this is the moment to do this and this and this. So obviously it's not so easy to implement as nothing is. It actually helps to put your mind back on the track when you have this kind of moments of getting distracted.
Kasia, can you explain a little bit more what you mean about a plan for the board?
I think this is like one of the tools that basically like sport psychologists are using. Doesn't matter which sport are you practicing. Probably every start or like every board in our sport looks kind of in a certain way. So it, for example, starts with counting points and evaluating the hand. Then you need to make the first bid. Then there is a time to analyze the whole auction before you make a lead. If you know the full structure and you have this kind of issue with your focus, then it's easier just to grab the idea of where should you actually be right now.
So it's kind of like there's a timetable for each board. And if you get distracted, you know where you are in the process to bring yourself back to that point.
Correct. Or it's easier to go like from one point to another point of the board without letting your thoughts go around. Yeah. So that was one of the tools that we were practicing, as far as I remember.
And do you consciously find yourself thinking about that during hands? Like, how often might you think, oh, actually, okay, I'm at this point? Or how often do you tend to use it?
You know, I try to use it as often as possible, but there are also different types of tournaments, if you think about it. Of course, the focus should always be on a certain level. There are different types of competition, and there are like competitions when you are engaged with people way more, that you are engaged, for example, on this like top level championships where basically like everybody is just focused on playing the hands. Not many people are talking. There are no chit chats or this kind of things in the middle of the games. What I actually like about bridge, that it has like these two faces. So there is like this very serious face of a very serious competition. But there is also like events that there are just way more social. For example, when you don't have a screen, yeah? I mean, there is always some small chit-chatting at the table because people play bridge not just to play hands. They play bridge because they are meeting other people, and this is like a social thing. So the fact that you meet people, that you can have some small conversation, that you can ask questions afterwards, or just, I don't know, talk about weather or whatever happened, just makes it more interesting and nice for most of us. In this kind of tournaments, is this kind of competitions, usually, you know, like you're sharing your focus a little between all these things. So it's nice that you can actually do both.
But as a bridge expert, I imagine sometimes you're also playing with clients. So there must be times when for you the hand is over, but your client is actually wanting to really examine the process and what happened within the hand. So you're, you know, I guess having a slightly meta experience where you're both playing it and stepping outside. Is it tricky juggling both those hats?
I think, you know, like everybody needs a different approach and every person needs a different thing. So it's also nice to see what actually is the expectation from your partner, because you said clients, but I think it's you can just easily say partner, because our clients are also our partners. But even if you play with your colleague, your friend, your son, you always need to find your way of building partnership and to talk about the hands and experience bridge in general. Some people love to talk during the hands, just after the hand. Some people prefer just to be quiet and discuss hands afterward. Some people like chit-chatting. Some people prefer not to talk at all at the table because they feel that distracts them. So there is no one answer for what you ask, because everybody is a different story. And this is also quite interesting that you meet so many people that are completely different at the bridge tables. You can see how differently they approach the game.
Do you remember the first time you were hired to play by a client?
I think it was a mixed open championship many, many years ago.
Quite an intro.
I remember we came up third. So that was also a very important event for me as a player, because that was a big thing back then. And it still is. I mean, every time you get a medal, this is something to really celebrate. I don't really remember all the emotions. I'm pretty sure I was very stressed back then with all the importance of the event, but also just because I'm a person that always feel extremely responsible for what is happening. I live through all this competition like very intensively, which is not a great thing sometimes, but I also give myself fully.
You said that whether you're playing with a client or you're playing with a peer, it's still always a partnership relationship. In what ways is the relationship similar?
I actually think that I'm building these relationships in a similar way, because whatever we think or however you see it, for me, my client is always my partner. So you may talk about different things because there is a different need right now, because usually with your professional partners, you have way more complicated systems. Usually, this is like what I'm saying. So you're talking about, maybe you're going more into details, but in the end, this is exactly the same. It should be, at least at the table, exactly the same relation. Usually with the client, you are like an expert. So basically, you're answering more the questions. This actually I like about myself. I don't have a problem to say that I don't know something, or I am not sure, or maybe it's good to ask for different opinions. Most of my clients, at least, this is my feeling, I hire me to get better. My intention is to help them with their game. Doesn't matter if it's just bidding, if it's declaring, or if it's just building a partnership. So in the end, I want to give them not only the best experience at the table, like personally, socially, what I also want to give them is a good bridge lesson in a way that they can actually benefit the most from it. This is also my thing. I like to see that my work has results. And I think it's also because many, many years ago, I started to have bridge school in Poland. We don't have bridge clubs in Poland here. This is like a different structure, known mostly in States or like in other countries. We don't have clubs. So like the idea of bridge lessons was kind of new. I started to teach people bridge from complete zero, from basics. And that was the part that I always liked the most. The seeing the results, seeing the understanding. Even if it's like just a small development, if whatever their thinking was, that was always the thing that was giving me energy to continue. And this is also what I want to see when I play with my clients. I just want them to feel that they are getting better because they play with me.
How did you learn to play?
We were never playing bridge at home. So it was quite a coincidence. Back then in my school, I was in high school, the coach of Polish juniors was having some extra classes. And for some reason, somebody decided that it's a good idea that 2 weeks of sports, like the usual thing you have at school, they are going to try to teach us bridge. And so from my whole class, that was like 30 people, I think I was the only one that was ever interested in it, but it stayed with me for a long time.
So it was in the school setting. And I'm curious, were you a particular type of student at the school? Like, were you very strong in math such that it was kind of an obvious thing?
This is something that I disagree, actually, because many people think that you need to be good in math to play bridge well. In general.
Well, I'm just wondering if it was more random or if it was like, oh, it's so obvious that it would be Kasia because she's so good at math. Or did it feel much more random than that?
I think I was always good in solving problems. This is how it goes. I was also very good at math. That's true. But I was not like a math genius. I had like around myself many people that were way better for me. Even if I was great at math, I had also like many people that were like really, really extremely good, winning some national competitions and this kind of thing. So I would never compare myself to them. But I think I was good in solving problems, and I was also very good in many things. I was not, you know, like a genius in any, but I was just very good in many, many different things. This is something that I think helped me, because if you think about any bridge hand, there is so many things you actually need to do, starting from some simple or not simple math, but going through being creative, to imagining things, to solving problems, as I said, to seeing some small things about your opponents. I mean, there are so many things. Also like building a partnership, like being a good partner for your partner and like getting all these benefits. It was not coincidence that I was actually good in this game. That the many qualities that I had back then and like interest that I just had just met exactly what I needed. So it was like a thing. So I got super interested. And then I don't know how it works in other countries, especially when you're being a junior. But here in Poland, we had quite a lot small junior tournaments. If they saw somebody that is maybe kind of good one day, they're basically helping these people to go to all these small events tournaments. So it became obviously a social thing back then, at least. So I found many friends there, and it started to be more natural to spend time this way. But obviously, I also loved the game, so it was extremely good combination for me. I had some kind of emptiness in my life that bridge just exactly, you know, like a piece of puzzle, last piece of puzzle that you just had to put there. Very, very, very romantic story.
So you just took to it straight away, like a duck to water.
Yeah. I think it was love at first sight.
What is it about the game that you love so much?
I think the part that I loved about the game during time changed. And at the beginning, it was just, you know, like the solving problems and all this. And I could go more deeply into it because this is obviously what I love. But I think nowadays, it is the fact that it is offline and that I can do it offline. I feel like I was raised still in like quite analog times, and I feel nowadays we as people have less and less chances just to experience things offline, especially with other people, and things are just getting more complicated because computers and screens and everything is just all over. So the fact that I can do my job but also like play the game that I love offline, I can just sit at the table with real people and just play physical cards. This gives me a lot of pleasure and enjoyment.
And now for a short break. And remember, if you don't like the ads, you can sign up for ad-free episodes on our website.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. So you live in Poland, correct?
Yeah, most of the time.
Whereabouts in Poland are you based?
I'm based in Wrocław, which is a city. Like, there are a couple of big events here, so maybe people know.
Yes. So you travel quite a lot, yeah?
Yeah, the last year was madness for me. So it's actually very nice to go back home and like have some time just to ground a little bit.
Yeah, I imagine it's quite an unusual and maybe destabilizing life, the life of a bridge pro and bridge champion, because you would be traveling a lot.
Yeah, I think it's very challenging. It's very intensive in interesting, and I always liked it. And I think this is also what basically made the bridge and bridge career interesting for me, because I like to change places. I just like changes in my life in general. Too much sometimes is too much. It's very hard to keep the work-life balance if you think about it. You're changing the place all the time. You're changing the time zones. You're basically leaving your home, your family. So it's also like very hard to keep good habits.
Well, how do you manage that? Do you have a routine that you try to stick to whenever you get back home from a tournament?
For me, every event, since I'm like really deeply into whatever I'm doing when I'm there, is very exhausting. So quite often, for at least a couple of days when I'm back home, I'm just trying to decompress. I try to do nothing. That's my idea. But besides this, and usually, you know, like the next week is just a week before you travel again. So for me, at least, it's very complicated. And I try to, you know, like eat well. I try to do some sports, because I found out that basically for me doing any sports while I'm playing bridge and like while I'm traveling, it's extremely hard, because I kind of never have time for it. But even not like time physically, but like room in my head, like to keep on the habits. It's just when I'm on the tournament, I'm on the tournament. And this is like this. So for me, it's a challenge. I have to say, for me, it's a challenge. And I'm trying to make it work the best for me. But sometimes it's very exhausting in general. I don't think it's like so obvious when you see like the bridge player career from like outside, because you see mostly traveling, you see new places, you see meeting extremely interesting people. And this is all true, but it also has a cost, especially for people with families. I don't have kids, for example, and I'm not married. So for me, this is quite easier, because I'm just by myself and I can do whatever I want with my time. But especially for people with a more stabilized life, I imagine that this is like a super complicated thing.
Obviously, when you go to a tournament, in terms of the other top level players, you're seeing many of the same people over and over again. Do you think you're drawn together socially because of this lifestyle? Does it bond you with the other players that you're all in this slightly peripatetic world?
Definitely, because I also think that it's very hard to understand how it works if you're not working like this. It's very hard to understand and see what are like challenges of this kind of life. And if you're like 200 or more days from a year not at home, it's natural that you get along more with people that you meet on the tournaments. I think this is like normal that most of the people make most friends when they're at school, university. I mean, when we are young, the older you get, it's like harder and harder, not only to make friends, but also to meet new people. For us, I think it's quite often it works like this, that we meet people playing bridge. This is like our natural environment.
Yeah, your natural community.
Yeah. I remember I started to play bridge when I was like around 18. So for example, it has this cost, but also like a gain, that most of my friends from back then were bridge players, were my colleagues from junior camps and junior events and this kind of things. And I didn't really have time, you know, like to make friends at university, because during weekends when everybody was partying, I was at some bridge competition somewhere playing cards. It was natural that like nowadays, most of my friends and close people are bridge players. If you think about it, I have some very, very, very good friends from my high school. Later on, this is how it is. Yeah.
The friends that you still keep in touch with from school, for example, what do they make of your life?
They are always very interested. I think from all my closest friends, I know that from all my closest friends, I'm the one that is traveling the most, definitely. This is always very interesting for people. This is kind of the thing that many people dream of, to have this kind of work and to see more and more new places and to meet new people and to live the life, if you think about it. They don't really realize that like most of this time it's actually work. Or even if you play bridge, this is kind of like most of your day, most of your time, even if you're just playing for yourself. But it's always nice to be back and to see how differently people live and how different, even if we came from the same background, how different our life is nowadays, what different careers and what different paths we actually picked. So it's nice also in a way that it's very hard to get bored, because if we meet, we always have something to talk about.
Have you taught any friends to play bridge?
No. But I don't think they were also very much interested. Actually, when I started to play at school, I played back then with my best friend. She's still my best friend, like even after years. But for her, it was like a very short love. And it stopped after like half a year. So she still knows the rules. And I remember when I opened my bridge school and made like some tournaments for amateurs, she came for one or two. It was never like the way that she really wanted to spend time. I guess this wasn't just her thing. So, and that's it. And I also have some friends that actually played bridge when they were juniors, and then they just gave up. Maybe they're going to be back soon or after, you know, like, because this is also quite popular, yeah, that juniors like are playing very intensively during junior times. Then they have some other priorities, which is kind of a normal thing, university, work, family. And then when the family settles, they like to come back. So maybe some of them we're going to meet again at the table for some of them, but yeah.
So if you were talking to some friends who were thinking of coming back and they were wanting to play at a tournament, which tournaments would you say are the ones you've most enjoyed playing at, and which is a favorite one that you like to return to?
I think there are one or two Polish summer bridge festivals that were always extremely relaxing for me. And since I have this kind of memory since I'm being a junior, so it still continues because it's still summer in my head. So if I have a chance, I like to go there. Just because it's like summertime also, the weather is usually quite nice and the atmosphere is, I would think, a little more relaxed than in usual tournaments. So this is like always like a nice way to spend time, because you're also kind of going back to your beginnings, because you remember these places from years ago. And it's extremely nice that they are still on and that these festivals are still happening. Unfortunately, quite often now there is some collision with some other events. So not always I can go, but I try to, because actually it's like reminding me of my beginnings when I was full of energy just because I played bridge and just because I was there. So it's nice to go back here.
And which tournament is that, Kasia?
There is, for example, very nice summer festival in Sopot by the sea, which I actually lived for 2 years. So if you know anybody who's interesting to come, please. It's usually in the middle of summer between July and August. The city itself is really, it's just beautiful and it has like this nice vibe, but also like very nice restaurants and like nice ways of spending time beside bridge. But what you have to know about Polish festivals, summer festivals, which is kind of different than I see in the other parts of Europe, that people come there to play bridge. So the first tournament starts at 10, then you have a short lunch break or something, and then you play again till like 9 p.m. or something. So like we're using the most of time possible. Of course, you don't need to attend all the tournaments, but if you like, I mean, this is like a really intensive thing. Can be a very intensive thing.
Sounds great.
What's the funniest thing that's ever happened to you when you were playing bridge?
I'm not sure if it's going to be funny or hilarious for other people, but I remember one time when I was playing the junior, some kind of junior event, and we were playing on screens. The bidding was over and we were like waiting for something to happen. And I persuaded the guy on my right that he can like lay out the dummy, because since we were like waiting for the lead from other side, at least I'm going to watch it. So he did it. But unfortunately, I was on the lead. So, and I don't know how it happened that he didn't realize that. I didn't realize that. I mean, I still want to think that those were like the beginnings of my game, but yeah.
I imagine the director was called very quickly.
Yeah, the director was called actually, and there was like a question what's supposed to happen with this. But he just looked at us and he said like, okay, you're on the lead, nothing happened. I mean, the fact that the guide showed all your cards to you, this is like voluntarily kind of. I didn't feel great to be honest back then, but now I think it was quite funny. That he just did it. I mean, maybe I was like extremely persuasive and I should like work on this part of my personality more and more. Maybe I can just, you know, like make more bridge players to do things that I actually want to do them, like play the ace. Yeah.
Your superpower. That's hilarious. Is that someone you still see on the bridge circuit?
No. I don't think he's still in the game. Maybe that was one of the reasons. Who knows?
You play with a lot of clients and you've also taught bridge. When you think about the many bridge books that I'm sure you've read, are there any in particular that stand out to you as ones that are especially useful for developing players?
I like the Martin's Bridge University. I think this is the title. This is like the whole series.
Is that Christoph Martin?
Yeah, Christoph Martin's. Mostly because it shows you the boards from a little different perspective. And the idea of the book is very interesting, at least for me. Because usually, you know, like the book has like this very long structure, explanations, stories and this kind of things. And the board somewhere in between. These books have like more tendency to be like a board and comparison with your imaginative table. So it's nice to put yourself in the shoe of an actual player, which is I find harder with other books.
What would your partner say is one of your strengths at the table?
I should ask my partners before I answer these questions, I think, because it's very hard to see yourself from like outside perspective. I think what changed for me a lot during like my those last years is I became more calm at the table, which actually helps. And I hope that this is something that makes my partners feel way better with me at the table.
How would you describe yourself previously?
I think I was just more all over the place, and I was getting too excited when something really happened. And I had a tendency to discuss more, you know, like in a heat of a moment. And I don't think that really helps. So I actually like that I kind of settled, and I see that the time for discussion is afterwards. And it's just better, you know, like to move on and like to leave all these things for later. That sounded very serious.
But I think this is really interesting. Did something happen that made you reevaluate the way you are at the table? Or has this just naturally occurred that you've become calmer over time?
I think maybe teaching people helped. That could be one of the things. I think this changed a lot in my attitude and the way I act at the table, especially with my partners. And that when I started to teach people, I actually experienced and observed more struggles, more people behaviors. And I also observed the way people interact with each other. Yet this gave me so much more understanding and patience and this natural calmness, I think.
Well, thinking again about your regular partner, is there any area of your game that they might like you to work on a little bit?
Oh, I think there are many, many, many things like that, to be honest. I'm constantly working on my focus and concentration for sure. And I think this for me, it's my biggest challenge, to be honest. I feel like I'm talking from my perspective more than my partner's, but I know that they see results of this. And also the fact that not always is very easy for me to just get into the game right away.
What do you mean?
Sometimes I need a longer warm-up. This is also the part of my game that I would like to work on, to be able to, you know, like be ready to do my best from like a very, very beginning.
But for example, it doesn't help, say, to be on an online platform playing hands beforehand before you get to the table. It's actually about when you're sitting there opposite your partner at the table, you need the warm-up from then.
Yeah, I definitely prefer to play longer events because I feel for me, my game, like it's getting better and more stable during the time of the event. So beginnings are always quite hard.
Right. So it's not about just having a couple of practice hands online before you go down to the table. It's actually session 3 or 4, you start to warm up.
You know, like, I think that playing online and playing live is a completely different story. It's just a different experience. It could be the way to help. Definitely it works for some people. For me, I think it's more deep.
Yeah, so it's not just about the hands. It's settling into the atmosphere of the tournament itself.
Yeah, exactly.
And in terms of your focus and concentration, because you have identified those issues as something that you're aware of, when you sit down at the table, are you telling yourself to focus? Are you telling yourself to concentrate? Or is it more just that you're looking at the plan of the hand and just trying to go through certain processes? How do you manage it?
I think it's very hard to describe what is happening with my head back then. So this is something that I actually try to work on with the sports psychologist. We try, you know, like to put some small techniques that are supposed to help me, and we'll see how it's going to work.
So you describe, for example, having the plan of the hand, the different stages of the hand.
Yeah.
Are they like anchors in the hand that you're like, okay, we're at the auction now, and these are ways for you to sort of land and really concentrate around that moment? Is that how it's meant to work?
Yeah, I mean, it helps you just to grab your thoughts and like come back to the point where you are supposed to be, like even telling yourself that this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now.
Also, does it kind of work like chapter markers? For example, if you're in the auction and in your mind, you're in that part of the plan, the auction part, and then later when you're in the play, because you had a point of focus and concentration around the auction, are you able, when you're in the play, to think, oh, I can go back to that chapter, the auction chapter, and remember and think about what was happening then, because you've, in a sense, ruled a line underneath that particular part?
Yeah, I think it also can work like this. Because if you're fully experiencing the moment, it's also like way easier to actually code and implement those moments in your head. So if you actually need to go back to it, it's way easier, at least for me. The idea is just to ground yourself in what you are doing right now. So there is not like big philosophy that you just need to go like through every step or something. This is more about grounding yourself to where you are. And maybe it sounds silly in a way, because obviously, you know, like we know why we are there. We're just playing. We're trying to get good result, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact is also that we're playing for many, many hours. And it's just impossible to keep your best focus for 4 hours straight, even or 3 hours straight. So this energy management has to be there. And I believe there are people that have it very naturally. They are just amazing in it naturally. And there are like other areas that they need to work on. But honestly, I think that for many people, many players, this is actually a problem, and that they are getting easily and unnecessarily distracted. Let's say it like this. And then it's very easy to blame yourself that you missed something extremely obvious, because if you were thinking about something, but you just didn't find a solution, I think it's easier to forget yourself as a player, yeah? But if you just missed something like the count of your partner and then you're struggling, what are you supposed to play next? I mean, those are extremely frustrating moments. So every technique that it's helping to be present at the most important moments of the board will help to develop your game.
Do you have a favorite bridge convention? Or gadget?
I think transfers. Every kind of transfers. This was actually from, I think, the big discovery for many, many people, that the transfers that we were using for so many years over One No Trump, and like everybody knows it. This is like complete standard. Like one of the first conventions that everybody is learning, that we started to implement transfers many different positions. If you think about it, it's so easy solution that you basically get one more bit of like one more round of giving information. So it's such an easy construct that we suddenly find out, and we started to put in like more complicated sequences or more complicated positions. Yeah, and the easiness of using it as well. I'm not a fan of complicated conventions, to be honest. I know that there are many people that like to have a complicated and like build system. But for me, and I think also for many, many people, learning the conventions as the system is very energy consuming. Like if your system have like 150 pages, you're usually using 30 probably, or even less. And the rest happens once in a year or once every half a year. And if things like this appear at the table, you're using so much energy just to remind yourself what happened that sometimes you're missing the energy for doing different things. And in the end, bridge is also like the energy management game, because you just have certain amount of focus, certain amount of energy. Okay, you can like work on making it bigger and bigger, but in general, you have like a pool of what you can use and you need to manage it. For some people, like having the perfect structure is great if they have like a natural memory. I don't think it's true for most of the people. And I also think this is the mistake of many beginners. At the beginning, at least, the most important is just some hand evaluation and playing the cards and not learning conventions. Because if you think about it, like in 9 of 10 hands, probably most of the system are going to bring us into the similar results, yeah, and to the similar contract. The contract may be different, maybe because somebody had some different hand evaluation. In a way, they decided no Trump is better than than a Trump, or they decided they have something more, so they are going to the slam and somebody else didn't. But most of the results are going to be kind of comparable. Most of the contracts are going to be kind of comparable. And in the end, it's about how you play cards. So definitely better systems are important on a hybrid level when you need to find every possible way to get like this something extra from your game compared to the other players. Most of the players in tournaments, the way we play, we're just competing, playing the cards and not competing in bidding or in having amazing number of conventions.
What about conventions that you really don't like to play?
I think one of those is quite popular to know Trump opening in Poland. I need to say that it's still quite popular in Poland to know Trump at both minors. I feel this is the convention that basically almost doesn't come up. And if it comes, like 90% of the hands are not great to open it, actually, even if you actually have this two suitor in minors, because your partner didn't pass before, because the quality of your suits is not correct, or because the vulnerability is not right, or this or this or that. So basically, this is just a useless thing that you have in your system. That's at least my feeling. And all the relays, oh my God. But this is more because of more how my memory works and how it is. I hate steps. If I need to give any answer based on steps, I'll be counting the steps forever. So and one more time, to be sure that I didn't make a mistake, and one more time just to make it sure. So steps are not for me.
What is the best bridge tip or advice that you've ever been given?
Be happy that you are not a heart surgeon. In the moment when I was, you know, like basically struggling deeply and emotionally with my mistakes. Yeah. I think this thing just gives a good perspective to what is actually happening. I mean, yeah, okay, you made a mistake. You may be unhappy about it. You lost something. You didn't do your best. Maybe. That's all true. But after all, the mistakes that we are making as bridge players don't have any serious life-threatening results. Learn from your mistakes and just move on and try to be better next time.
Kasia, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you very much.
And that's the show. Many thanks to our guest, Katarzyna Dufrat.
Thank you also to our Sorry Partner posse of listener supporters who make the show possible.
Sorry Partner is produced by Catherine Harris, with production assistance from Jade Gray. Our theme music was composed by Jocelyn Starts and produced by Daniel Graboy.
Send your bridge stories and comments to sorrypartnerpodcast@gmail.com or send us a voice message. And please consider supporting the show. Join the Sorry Partner posse, purchase books through our site, explore the merch store. These links and a link to Club Kvel are in your app, on the website at sorrypartner.com, or wherever you like to listen. We'd love to hear from you, but be nice or we'll call the director. Until next time, play well.
May all your finesses be onside. And remember, as Kasia says, learn from your mistakes, but keep your perspective. Thank you, partner.
Thank you, partner.
Bye.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.